Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by The Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.
Hello from the Baltimore Sun. I'm Dan Rodericks. This is Roughly Speaking, episode 362 for Wednesday, February 28th, 2018. Today, a special treat, a visit to the wholesale fish market in Jessup, Maryland, with a chef who still does what a lot of chefs used to do. He gets up early in the morning to see what looks fresh and what looks good enough to cook for his customers for dinner. And while we're shopping for seafood with Chef Michelle Tersegul, we'll meet a man named Andy, who displays a fine hand at an old craft, filleting one of the boniest of fish, the shad, a seasonal but fading tradition of the Chesapeake dinner table. Once upon a time, the wholesale fish market was in Baltimore, and it used to be easy for chefs to go there to see and smell the catch of the day. The market moved to Jessup in 1984. One of the companies that moved there was Reliant Fish Company, now in its third generation of family ownership. Reliant is where Michelle Tersegul goes two, sometimes three times a week, to place and pick up his orders. It's fairly easy for him to do that because Tersegul's French country restaurant is located only 11 miles away in Ellicott City. 2 years ago, the restaurant was among Main Street businesses knocked out by the flood that hit Ellicott City. But Tersegul's reopened, and Michelle Tersegul resumed his routine. It's what the French call cuisine du marché, the practice of going to the market to be inspired, to choose what looks good, then building a menu or a set of specials from there. Today, we'll join Michelle for one of his 5 a.m. jaunts to Jessup and Reliant Fish Company. We'll get a tour from one of Reliant's owners, Fran Welsh, and we'll visit the cutting room where Andy Faircobb and other workers prepare the fillets for delivery to markets and restaurants. The seafood market in Jessup is open to the public, but it's not a place many bother to go. It's certainly not between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. when men are shoveling ice and moving crates, preparing orders and loading trucks. We're outside Reliant Fish Market.
Yes, Reliant Fish Market in Jessup Market. So they're one of the last guys who are in the actual fish market itself. We're going to go right up here, right up the stairs. We're going to check out what fish they have and look for.
I can already smell it.
Yes.
But this is the winter level of fish odor, right?
Yes,
which isn't too bad.
The summer level is another level for sure.
So what are you thinking of buying today?
Well, we're going to get a little bit of lobster for my lobster spaghetti. I need to get some smoked salmon. And I got one item I'm thinking about. I'm going to need to get some shrimp also because we have shrimp on the menu. I do that with a little bit of perino and green peppercorn. So I'll have a little bit of that for this weekend. So I got to get a couple of those things. And I'm going to talk about what kind of fish he's going to have coming in tomorrow. So that way, because today I don't need it, but tomorrow I'm definitely going to need something. So see what's coming in. One of the main reasons I came to Fran, the first day I came in here, he told me I turn 80% of my stock every day. And that means it's going to be super fresh all the time. So
80% of it.
You need to go. It needs to move like that. Because if it doesn't move like that, then you're sitting on old stuff. The other thing Fran told me, I always pay my fisherman in 3 days. And that what that tells you right away is he's going to get the highest quality stuff right away.
This is the only vendor you deal with. You manage to find what you need for your restaurant in this one place.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah. And we've dealt with other people, and there are a lot of good ones out there. But Fran, we have a connection. Again, it's a family operation, just like my restaurant, given from the father to sons. And we've had a relationship now for over 15 years, and it's been great. They're getting whole fish in, and then they'll be filleting some fish. They'll be sending whole fish and fillet fish out also.
And it comes from all over? I mean, where does Reliant get food, seafood from?
It comes from everywhere. So it comes from anywhere from the coast of Africa, the Gulf Coast, Alaska, up in the North Atlantic, any place in between there on this side of the, you know, this side
of the world.
Yeah, the world. So as you can see, everybody here is working, getting ready to get their deliveries out. You can see the ice, they're moving fish, they're cutting fish. And then on the main floor here, we have all the fish here that you can kind of pick. Plus, they have refrigerators.
You come to the market. You might be the only chef that does this.
At this point, I think so. Yeah, like when my father used to come 30-plus years ago, I used to go to a fish market downtown, and he'd come to the vegetable market out here in Jessup. There'd be many chefs and restaurant owners, and they'd all, like, get together with their cups of coffee, talk about business and stuff like that. You don't see that too often anymore.
Well, the idea of the chef personally going to the market to pick out fish or vegetables, yeah. I mean, this isn't generally done anymore, is it?
Not really, no.
You know, it's not convenient, really, to go to Jessup to visit the market. For most chefs, say you were in Washington or Baltimore.
It's definitely more, it's more difficult, but you can get to see the product. Like right here, we're seeing a fish over there he's picking up, and it's still got rigor mortis in it, so it's still stiff. You don't usually see that, so you can tell that's a really fresh fish. So you really get to see the product. It gets to, you know, you get to get the product early so you can work with it, and then you can kind of get inspired by it, too.
What was that, by the way? Is that king mackerel?
That is mackerel, yes, right there.
You interested in mackerel for a special?
It's not a hot seller for us.
No. So what are you looking for today?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, always rockfish this time of the year is a big one for us, otherwise known as striped bass. So we take a quick look around and just we'll open up some of these boxes.
Some beautiful fish here. There's some shad.
They've got shad roe. That might be one of the first shad roes I'm seeing this part time of the year.
Is that container of shad roe? It's getting to be that time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. So this is probably one of the first ones. This used to be a hot seller for us. I might try to bring it back in, but it's just one of the issues with shad roe is we have a hard time selling it. The guests just don't know about it anymore. So it'll be something.
That's funny. You know, that's like old school Baltimore or Chesapeake cuisine. There used to be a restaurant on Charles Street called Danny's,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
he'd put a sign up every year that said, the run is on, meaning the shad run is on.
The run was on,
it's
yep.
time to come in for some roe.
Exactly, exactly. And my father actually worked for Danny's for a small period of time.
Oh, really?
Before he opened his first restaurant. But Danny's would also have the whales are in, right? For
the whales are in, meaning the crabs, right?
Exactly, exactly. So he was really one of the big guys in Baltimore who knew how to market, but he had that old classical French cuisine plus local cuisine at the same time.
So, well, I wonder if you made a fuss about having shad roe again. You know, you'd have to sell it to people. You'd have to say, this is a Chesapeake tradition we're bringing back for a couple of weeks.
Definitely, definitely you have to do that. But it's because of the texture, I think it turns a lot of people off. So that's something I can work in.
Here's the thing I never understood. So say you want to take a chance with shad roe or, I don't know, halibut or something. Maybe halibut's less dicey because people are familiar with it.
Yep.
How do you know how much to buy?
It's always a experience. You know, sometimes you're going to throw some stuff out. Like the last couple times I bought shad roe, you know, after a couple days, I have had to toss some. So you end up eating it yourself sometimes. But I'll probably, you know, just looking at the shad roe here, that's the first of the year for me seeing it. I'm going to probably get some. I'll probably make the big thing for something like shad roe. A lot of people aren't going to maybe commit to it as an entree. But as an appetizer, they'll have a little bit more, an easier time of going, you know what, I'll try something on a chef menu. So we do an 8-course chef menu. That's a perfect item to have that. That's more for a foodie where you go, okay, shad roe is going to be one of the courses. Well, you're not completely committed to it because you have 7 other courses that you're really going to enjoy. But this is going to be a little bit of a stranger one, a little bit of history. And that's, you know, the food that we do is definitely all has stories behind it. So not only does this have a story about, you know, our family's restaurant, but also a story about Maryland, which would be something pretty cool, you know, think about it. You know, so
have you ever taken a chance on a vegetable, say, Brussels sprouts? You know, some people love Brussels sprouts. A lot of people, they can take it or leave it.
Oh, yeah. We've, you know, and again, Brussels sprouts are one of those, like you said, you either love it or hate it. I remember about 10 years ago, I went to this really nice restaurant in D.C., had this wonderful Brussels sprout salad, okay? And it had, you know, some raisins in it, had some almonds in it, and had some olive oil and some prosciutto in it. Mm. Just loved it. They separated the leaves individually, and I'd never had it like that. And I've been cooking for 25 years and never seen something. I was like, that's pretty interesting. And at that point, I left it at that point. I was like, I wasn't thinking about making a new dish or using it or anything like that. So a year later, I'm walking through the market in the summer. So you don't expect to see Brussels sprouts in the summer, but here it is, these beautiful Brussels sprouts. And I was like, you know what? That idea right there inspired me to do a dish like I had. But instead of selling the dish at that point, because a lot of people don't like Brussels sprouts, we made a little amuse-bouche, which is kind of like a little gift to the table. And I almost kind of forced customers to eat it. So I would go out there and tell them they had to eat the dish when
this
we brought it out.
This is good for you.
This is good for you. And almost 99% of the people were like, wow. Because this dish, the way it was prepared, didn't taste like your normal Brussels sprout dish. It tasted like almost like a hearty spinach leaf. And so you made a little salad like that, put it on a crouton. It was just, and you know, for people to see something new, for something they've seen for many years that they didn't like in a new way, it really opens their eyes.
The fact that you went to the market and saw something it inspired you or reminded you of something you wanted to try.
Exactly. And that's it. And throughout all your travels, you're going to be inspired by different things, and then it'll pop up in different areas. So here at the fish market, of course, we're going to look at some stuff and see what will inspire us this week. Let's take a look.
So you have some idea. You were thinking maybe rockfish. It's February. He just opened a box.
Yeah, so let's take a look at it, see how fresh that is. But this is, you can tell this is not a wild rockfish by looking at the stripes. The wild rockfish, the stripes will be straight. Mm-hmm. Here, as you see, they're all crooked, and we'll get a wild one. We'll take a look at it.
So this would be a farm-raised rockfish?
Farm-raised, and usually they're crossed, I believe, with white bass. So you can see the difference here, and it's still a great product, but I typically like to get a wild rockfish because the fillet is a little bit bigger, but again, I love the wild from the Chesapeake Bay type of thing.
How have you prepared rockfish at Tursico?
Oh, my God. I can't.
A number of different ways?
A thousand different ways, easily. It's a real easy fish. Now, here's another fish we're going to take.
What would you say is the most popular preparation of rockfish? What would you say?
This week I've done a wrapped rockfish in a thin pastry called a brick paper. That I've had like a saffron scallop sauce that's gone with it. That's gone really well. I've done one where we're using wild mushrooms with a dark veal stock reduced down with a ginger reduction, so it's more of a meaty flavor to it. So it can go the gamut on a rockfish. It can do a lot of different cooking styles and has a great texture, and it's just a great product for us. You know, we're very lucky to have it here most of the year. So right over here, just taking a quick look, I see there's some skate.
Skate.
Yeah, so like a ray fish.
Yeah, like a ray. Now, what do you do with that?
Well, you cut the meat off the wing. So that's right there. They don't have the rest of the body. They just have the wing. If you touch it, it's a very slimy fish.
Right.
And it also has little thorns on it. You have to be careful. You get yourself cut. But I'm smelling it right now to make sure there's no odor. The thing with skate is it's a wonderful tasting fish. It's very sweet. A lot of people, when they have it, it's a great fish. The problem for us, it's very perishable. One second, it's fantastic. And then the next second, it doesn't have any it's getting bad type of thing, or it's getting old. It goes from being wonderful to horrible in 2 seconds.
So what can you do about that? Heavily ice it?
You ice it, you keep it cold, and you just use it as quick as possible, so you don't buy very much of it. So I would buy a lot of skate. What you can do also, if you buy a lot, is you could freeze it after you fillet it. So that's what we've done in the past, when I had a walk-in freezer before our flood. Now I don't have a freezer.
Before the flood in Ellicott City.
Before the flood in Ellicott City.
But, okay, so it's 5 o'clock in the morning now, at 5:30, and someone may come in for dinner at 7:30 p.m. tonight.
Yes.
And so if you wanted to give them that skate, between now, if you walked out of here with that today,
I think I got,
could you have it?
I think I'd have a good 72 hours on it. Right. At that point, then I'm I got to sell it within that time period. And these guys here at Reliance, the main reason I came to these guys was all the other fish companies at the time when I was buying bought a lot of their fish, the whole fish from here. They used to not cut fish, used to be only whole fish. So all their fish was super fresh because they were selling to the other fish guys. So something like the skate, you really have to have a reliable vendor, which all these guys are right now. It's not as many markets, but Reliant has, for me, been very reliable over the years. And they would, if something was not good, they would steer me away from it very quickly.
Michelle, what's in the next box, just right below here?
I think that's triggerfish. I'm not sure
triggerfish?
What it is. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. I know right here is some monkfish.
That's a great fish for dinner.
It's a great fish. You know, it's known as poor man's lobster.
Right.
So here's just the tail. They don't bring the head in. And the reason they don't bring the head in, it's all the weight that it carries. And, of course, the monkfish is not the prettiest fish at all.
You remember Julia Child on one of her programs filleting a monkfish and grossing out most of America with it. But it is a great – do you cut it into small pieces?
So what I would do here is, if you're looking at the tail, it's like one big bone in the middle. And I would just cut a fillet off of each side, skin it, of course. Mm-hmm. And then the best – way we've had it is roasting it, but butter poaching it is wonderful also if you want something very mild but very bland tasting.
Yeah.
It's more blander, more on the lobster side. It's all about the butter on that one. But it takes well to a lot of stuff because it has it's a very thick fish typically, and very meaty. So roasting it would be something that would be really good.
Reliant, I assume they know where everything comes from, like this monkfish you just picked up.
Yeah.
If you wanted to trace where it came from, they would know.
They would know right down to the fisherman on some stuff. So some of the shows that they've had, on TV, the tuna fishing guys, they buy stuff from those guys also. They'll know if it's coming from them. So here we're looking at fluke over here.
Nice, a fluke, which is like a nice big flounder.
Yeah, exactly.
It's another box. And Michelle is used to just coming along and sticking his hand in these boxes and pulling out fish to look at it, right? This is part of the, this is what you do here.
Yep, that's
there's some more skate.
That's a monkfish head.
Oh, that's the monkfish head. Which somebody
I've never seen himself.
Do you know what's amazing? Look at that. He's got a fish in his mouth.
Yeah, he was hungry.
That monkfish was caught while he was still chewing on his prey.
Yes,
right?
He was.
So
yes, he
would
was.
Somebody use that for his soup or something?
I would think so, yeah. And a lot of times these fish also have cheeks on them, which are very, very, it's something.
Tender.
Very tender. I don't see them on here. I've never had seen a monkfish head at the market here. I've seen a whole monkfish, but never the head.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Attractive only to another monkfish.
Yes, yes.
And what do you think's in there?
It looks like it's going to be fluke.
Some more fluke. That's a nice fish, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah.
It's fairly expensive?
Fluke is something that's gotten very expensive now. It used to be something that was inexpensive, but due to regulations now, it used to be fluke you could buy maybe fillet sometimes at like $6 a pound. I'm talking 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Showing my age a little bit. But now, you know, I've seen it as high as $19 a pound. So they have restrictions on the fishermen how much fluke they can catch. And again, these are all restrictions when they think about them. They're thinking they want to save the fish. But, you know, talking to my guys here, it's like, okay, so they can only catch 50 pounds of fluke. Well, you know what they're going to do? They're going to fish for 200 pounds of fish and pick out the best 50 pounds and then dump the rest back in the ocean. So you're really losing all that.
It was time to meet Fran Welsh, whose family started Reliance Seafood back in the old wholesale market in Baltimore, where Port Discovery is today. The variety of fish on Reliance floor and in its inner rooms is kind of overwhelming. I guess one question is, like, where does all this fish come from? If I were to point to a box, wild-caught product of USA, we open up that box, would you know where that fish came from?
Sure.
What's in there, Fran?
Those are bone shad fillet. It's a product that we...
Shad fillet?
Yeah, shad is a very bony fish.
Somebody actually fillets a shad.
Yeah, and these haven't been boned yet, but we'll take the bones out of these.
Wow.
And it's 32 cuts per side to get the bones out.
Where does it come from this time of year?
These are coming out of South Carolina right now, and then they'll move up the coast as the season progresses.
Right. And Michelle was saying he saw some shad roe already showing up.
Yeah.
Also from the same area, South Carolina?
Same fish.
Same fish.
We split them, take the eggs out, and then we bone the fillets.
Let's walk over here. Got a lot of ice. Big ice machine. There's some shellfish, too. I haven't asked about the shellfish.
Yeah, you want to see some scallops?
Sure.
Some day boat scallops?
Yeah, sure.
Day boat scallops out of Barnegat Light, New Jersey. Hmm. Boat was out. A day boat can go out for 2 days. And depending on the catch. So these are as good as they get.
And so when were those harvested? Today, we're recording this on a Thursday
these
morning.
These came in to me late yesterday. So the boats were working maybe Monday.
Do you or your workers look at everything? I mean,
yeah.
You have to open every box, right?
You have to. Because, you know, quality-wise, you know, you don't want to put stuff out that's not right.
And you smell it. You don't just look at it, right?
Yeah.
So the scallops, yeah, those look really good.
That smells like the ocean.
Now, Michelle's here. Are the scallops getting you excited?
Of course. Always do.
How do you like to prepare scallops?
Usually we pan sear them. But again, scallops is one of those very versatile seafoods that you can do a lot of stuff with. So right now on our menu, we're doing a brown butter with asparagus with a lemon risotto with it. But we're changing our menu next week, and we've already got some raspberry vinegar. We're going to make a raspberry vinegar brown butter with it, with a green risotto. So that's the plan. I'm thinking of warm weather. We're going to have green vegetables. So I'm hoping, even though we're in February still, but I'm always hopeful.
Yeah, well, we've had a couple of days of spring-like weather that gets you thinking about, and the shad gets you thinking about spring too, right? And so, is that red snapper? Or red fish?
It's a red snapper, right? Fran, what kind of that? Lane
feline.
Snapper?
Feline? Vermilion snapper. The vermilion snapper.
Vermilion snapper.
Where does that come from?
Florida.
Florida.
It's landed in Panama City.
That's a beautiful fish. I don't know how it is to work. Have you ever cooked that before?
Oh, yeah.
Vermilion snapper?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've used it quite a bit. But again, that's more something from the south, meaning Florida, that area. So, again, I tend to try to go stuff that's a little bit more in this area with the rockfish and stuff like that.
But it's beautiful.
Fran, what about all these shellfish over here, the hard-shell clams? Where do you get those from, the hard-shell clams?
Carolina to Virginia. We get some from up north. Northern clams tend to be a little more pricey, so try to stay further south.
This is all future chowder here, most of it.
Yeah.
Just past the pallets of bushel bags of clams was the lobster room, one of the stops Michelle Tersigal makes for a special he's been serving recently.
Each tub has different sized lobsters in them. We stock everything from a pound sized lobster up to like a 2 to 2.5 pound. We can get bigger lobsters, but you know they don't sell as fast, so we special order those.
All Maine, and you can keep them here for... But they don't stay very long, but you could keep them here for a while, right?
You know, we keep our inventory so that we're rolling them over. We get lobsters in almost every day.
How does lobster do at the restaurant? From time to time, do you try it?
We do. Lobster is kind of a funny thing. When we put it on the menu, we can sell 10 orders in a row, and then we won't sell an order for 3 days. So it's one of those things you got to be real tricky about how much you get. Right now, we actually have lobster spaghetti on the menu, which is going to be, we'll be finishing that up at the end of this cycle, which is on Sunday, which has been selling pretty good. So we've been really good with that. And what we do is with the meat of the lobster, we saute that. But with the shells, we make a wonderful sauce, kind of like a bisque almost, like you would see. Mm. And that goes in with the spaghetti. And so that's wonderful like that.
So it's a thicker, creamier sauce.
Creamier sauce, exactly.
Good. Getting hungry hearing about this, Fran?
I know.
Do you order seafood when you go out to dinner?
Absolutely. Maybe it was salmon room. You want to take those?
Okay,
two?
Sure. Yeah, we can go there.
We handle all size salmon from 4 to 6 pound up to 18 to 20 pound fish. We buy truckloads. This is what's left out of a truck that came in last night at 7.
From where?
British Columbia.
Wow, that was quite a schlep with salmon.
It takes the
Pacific Coast.
Yeah, it takes 56 hours from the drive across country. It's a team. So they drive straight through.
So we're looking at a big stack of foam boxes here. Is this all from this shipment? Because I see the Canadian label on there.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a long rectangular foam box.
So the funny thing about the salmon, when you see the real fresh salmon, and we'll see it more in the cutting room maybe, is it has almost a cucumber smell to it if it's super fresh. That's one of the things you smell and you look for. But you'll see that more.
What kind of salmon is that?
Farm-raised Atlantic.
Farm-raised Atlantic from British Columbia.
It's the salmon that lends itself to farming the best. Now, these fish are pen-raised in open waters, and I've been to the farms. They're up in the straits, and the water runs anywhere from 8 to 15 knots. So you get plenty of water flow that flushes out, you know, everything.
That's the way it's done in Maine now, too, right? In pens, they do it?
They do some in Maine, but most of it is in Canada. Nova Scotia area, New Brunswick, they have a lot of farms.
How does this look to you? To me, it looks superb, but does it have that cucumber smell?
Yeah, it does. Put your nose on there. Okay. It smells like a cucumber, amazingly
enough.
Really?
Gills are nice and red.
It is. You're right.
Yeah, and that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a nice, fresh, clean smell, bright eyes, and you know, Fran's got it all right here.
So, Fran, and you guys fillet this, right?
Yeah, we'll go take a look at that.
Okay, we'll go in the cutting room next. I see so much salmon in the market and on menus. That must be one of the biggest sellers, right?
It's the number one fish.
I'm going to say. Not surprised to hear that. You keep salmon on the menu, Michelle, or do you do it as a special?
I have it as a special every day. And we buy a salmon, actually it's shipped from Fran from Scotland, an organic salmon, from Weston Ross, which is wonderful.
Do you get it from Reliant?
I get it from Reliant, yep. So he has a multiple, like, how many types of salmon do you sell, Fran, would you say?
Maybe about seven or eight. I mean, it's global. You got Norway, Scotland, Iceland.
So there's plenty of salmon over there getting ready to be cut, being washed off. And behind us looks like is that tuna?
It's a yellowfin.
Michelle just pointed to, what were you pointing to?
Well, I'm pointing, number one, the fin, but also you see the little cut on the tail.
Yeah.
That's how they grade swordfish and tuna, and they grade it differently. So it's graded in number one, number two terms.
So what's that cut tell you?
It tells you exactly the amount of fat that's in it, the color of the fish, the quality of it, and then that's going to tell you how much you have to pay for it. And again, that's very subjective to each market, to each area. So maybe a number two in New York might be a number one here. I don't know if sometimes that might be the case or not.
The less fish on the market, the grade slides because you got to have it.
Yeah.
But the more fish on the market,
the more choices you have.
Right. Yeah. Everything is hand cut to order. So the fish stays best. You get the best shelf life on the bone. And then when you process it, you know, then end user has more shelf life that way.
So look at the shad man over there.
He's probably the best shad cutter in the world.
Well, we should just explain to people a bit that the shad is probably the boniest fish that's harvested for the market.
Yeah, I think.
And a lot of chefs and individuals just don't want to bother with it.
They're not going to be able to or want to. So yeah, I've heard one guy who's been doing it probably 40 years. And how many cuts did you say, Fran? Is it 37?
32
cuts. On the bone to get a shad fillet.
Yeah.
So what's his name?
Andy? Andy Faircock.
Andy is a big man with great skill with the long, narrow shad knife. Shad was once abundant throughout the region, but overfishing took it out of the market for many years. And though available, the appetite for the migratory fish is now largely limited to an older clientele. Andy Faircobb is one of the last cutters at Jessup up to the challenge of filleting the bony fish for the winter-spring market. The fillets go to a few Baltimore supermarkets and restaurants. Michelle had one more room he wanted to show me.
I wanted to take you into the freezer just to give you an idea. There's one guy who works the freezer, and I always thought it funny. Like, I'd come here when it's 20 degrees outside,
yeah.
And the guy who would work in the freezer is outside warming up in the 20-degree weather, just to give you an idea. So watch your step walking in. It's
okay.
A little slippery coming in. But you get an idea right away, if you're working here all day, how cold it would get. But I usually buy like head-on shrimp or lobster tails or even peeled shrimp from here. Shrimp being a very perishable item. France sometimes has fresh shrimp, but a lot of times that's dealt in a frozen, almost always in frozen state. But you get an idea how cold it is in here. If you had to do more than a couple minutes, you just feel it. You know,
do you think a shrimp doesn't lose much between freezing and fresh?
Well, a fresh shrimp, when you get it, like I've gotten it from Fran before, the whole shrimp that are fresh, it's like a different animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you get the fresh shrimp, again, it's like the skate we were talking about. It goes from being, you know, super quality to being awful pretty quickly.
Ocean perch, baby octopus, more salmon, headless shrimp from Texas. And what's this other box here? Argentina.
That is H&G croakers.
Croakers.
Yeah, with the head and gutted.
Croakers like we catch in the ocean here? Or?
Yeah, it's a similar fish.
It was time to go, so he said so long to Fran Welsh. One of his employees put Michelle Tersicle's order in the back of his pickup truck, and we headed back to his restaurant in Ellicott City. I didn't know it at the time, but Michelle had picked up a couple of those skate fillets he had talked about earlier, and he wouldn't let me leave without tasting it, so in the kitchen we went with the skate and some fresh mango and Brussels sprouts from the Jessup Produce Market. So you bought some Brussels sprouts, you bought some mango,
mm-hmm.
You brought home some skate, and now we're going to have a brunch of skate. And what are you thinking?
I'm trimming the Brussels sprout leaves right here to make them so we can wilt them nicely. And we're going to do a little mango salad with it. We're going to saute the skate. And the classic preparation of skate in France is usually what they call a beurre noir, which is a black butter. So we'll do a little black butter to go with it. It has almost like a maple syrup kind of taste to it, or molasses even. So that's going to go well with the skate, which is really sweet. And we'll try to find some acid someplace, maybe a little lemon juice or something to go with it also. But right now I'm just cutting the Brussels sprouts. I think we have enough there for both of us. And then now I will do the mangoes and peel that. And it's that yellow mango that they were talking about at the market, and he was saying it was a really nice flavor. But look at that, isn't it?
Looks
brilliant?
Yeah, it looks now? Beautiful, yeah.
So.
Oh, boy.
We'll see how it tastes. Right now I got a black steel pan. It's called blue steel pan. It's going to have a little bit of an olive oil. I think it's grapeseed oil mix that we're cooking with here, which gives it a higher smoking point. So we have the skate cut over here. We're going to season it with a little salt and pepper. So a little bit of salt and pepper on top of the skate. And you could flour it if you wanted to, dredge it in flour, but we're going to go gluten-free today. We're just going to go straight into pan.
You can hear the sizzling right there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's try a third piece. Let's see if we can make it fit in the pan. I'm going to add a little bit of butter to that.
So it goes from what they call in French a beurre noisette, which means like hazelnut butter, which is just a brown color. We're going to get it to the point where it's black. And it's going to give it, like I said, a sweeter flavor. So as you can see right there, if you could see it, I can describe it to you. There's brown, the butter's starting to brown. And it's going around the skate right there.
Mm-hmm. And that's just simple salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper.
Is skate a delicacy in France?
I think it's an everyday type of fish you would eat. Not necessarily a delicacy, but I think when you have it prepared right, it can be a delicacy, like anything else. You know,
In this country, a delicacy to me is something you just don't see every day. It's not like you can go to the store and buy salmon any day. You don't see skate in the market.
You don't see skate in the market, but typically when you say delicacy, I think expensive a lot of times.
Yeah.
Skate is very inexpensive.
It's cheap. Okay, so it's a cheap delicacy.
Yes.
So we're here at Terre Segura at a time of day when, well, there's really nobody here except you.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll be by myself here other than deliveries coming in until about 2 o'clock.
And then what do you do? Try to get a nap before you go to work?
Exactly. So what I'll do is I'll have my cooks and apprentices come in. I'll give them instructions of where to go with what the preparations that we have to do left. We open at 4 o'clock, but I'm usually back by 4:35. And then I'll be here typically till about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, depending what guests we have and what time they're here.
That fish meat holds together nicely, too, doesn't it?
It does. It does, but it is very delicate.
If you can see the lines in it.
Yeah, you can see it's like a wing. You can see the wing exactly. And that's it's a soft fish also, so it's not going to take a lot of so someone who has problems chewing or something like that. It's a very soft, very tender is more of the word we use it. So right now I'm going to put the skate on the side. I think we're done cooking here for a second, and I'm going to get the Brussels sprouts going right now. So we're going to do here.
So you're going to wilt these Brussels sprout leaves. So you took time to actually peel the Brussels sprouts to get a pile of leaves here. Oh, isn't it nice to be able to walk over and have some chopped garlic already there for you?
Chopped garlic, chopped shallots, everything's ready. That's the great thing about a restaurant. So wilt that a little bit there like that.
Right.
You smell the garlic.
Oh boy, it smells great. And he's wilting the leaves from the Brussels sprouts. The only moisture you use with that is the oil. You don't
a little bit of oil, and then we can add a little bit of water if we wanted to, or a little vinegar. My red wine vinegar here, a little bit. We'll add that in there, and that'll wilt it right there. So kind of like a warm salad is what we're having here.
Yeah.
And there we are. We are wilted. And then what we're going to do here, I'm just going to put a little bit of diced mango with it last second, give it a little sweetness. We'll put this on a plate, and we'll eat it.
And that was truly delicious. I had never had skate before and was surprised at how sweet it was. And that warm Brussels sprouts and mango salad, also quite delicious. I hope you don't mind that little indulgence. I took it as a little bonus for getting up dark and early to go to the wholesale market with an inspired chef. I hope you enjoyed our visit to Jessup. We also made a brief stop at Michelle's favorite produce vendors, but that's a subject for another day, another episode of Roughly Speaking. Look for a video of Andy Faircobb filleting a shad at BaltimoreSun.com, and you can see a photograph of what Michelle cooked for me in a Roughly Speaking blog post. Your thoughts are always welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please review our show on iTunes if you get a chance. We appreciate it. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking from the Baltimore Sun, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.